Yeah, there's all that aspect of it too, you know, these environmental toxins and all these things that we're exposed to. And then we don't even necessarily even think about that. But I mean, you have to look in, and I think what we were touching on before when you were on our show, and maybe we even talked about it a little bit today, is this: when you're in this sort of movement, this truth movement, there's some sort of like level of introspection that has to go on. Like you're saying, how, you know, it's not about waking up other people, it's about finding, you know, what I can do to be a better person, or what I can, and then, and a lot of that starts with your relationship with your closest people, your spouse, your children, you know, your parents, and learning to forgive, you know, yourself at times, but then also just reflect on, like, well, why do I do this? Why do I act out this way? And then maybe that will, you know, once you see it, then you can kind of stop yourself when you're doing it the next time, and it gets kind of easier to control.
Well, it's about self-improvement, and I've said for a long time that the essence of being good is about restraint, things that you won't do under any circumstances, and the essence of evil is precisely the opposite, that you will not restrain yourself from doing anything you want.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think that, you know, what this sort of system that we're talking about, these oligarchs, or these people who are in positions of power, these few, is that they prey upon the I guess your victimhood, or your you as a, and then going back to the whole feminist thing, that was the kind of the point that I was making with it. A lot of what the feminists do is they disempower themselves by saying, you know, I was a victim, I was raped, I had this problem, or, you know, men are evil because they do these things and they want sex from women, or so on and so forth. So I'm disempowered, I'm a victim. Oh, but and you know, feel sorry for me, which isn't necessarily true. You're kind of taking out what happened to you, maybe as a child, you know, if you were molested or if something happened to you when you were younger, but then you're sort of, you know, generalizing it to the mass population, not necessarily recognizing that's not normal male behavior. You know, there's only a few people that actually do those things, and that's what these oligarchs do to us too. You know, they make it seem like this is what humanity is, but it's really not. It's just you few people that are doing all these things. You know, the mass majority of people aren't doing those things to each other. You know, they're actually, but, you know, we're.
You don't really see stories on the news about how a father and mother lovingly raised their parents to be healthy adults, do you? No.
No.
But if they chain them in the basement or something like that and rape them and have several children from their own children,
Right.
boy, everybody hears about that, don't they? What
Yeah.
examples are we putting out for people? See, this is what MTV's about, I think, is that all you're putting out is these really beautiful young girls who are, you know, all right with Jesus and very clean cut and what have you, and then they come of age and turn into super prostitutes.
Yeah, and bathe in bathtubs of blood, and like the satanic aspect too of the you know, of MTV.
Yeah,
This is terrible.
It's grooming. Pedophile grooming, I think. A little bit of it.
Pedophile murder, I mean, a lot of things on the dark side, you know?
Oh,
All
yeah.
this stuff is terrible.
Well, have you noticed, like, I don't know if this is different for a man or a woman. I think it affects us the same. Just the word pedophile. You know? It's horrific. Just the thought that somebody could rape children. Oh my God. And why do you think it's so rampant? It's because it's so disgusting that nobody wants to hear about it or solve it.
I talk about it, yeah.
Right.
Oh, it's so rampant. Yeah.
Right, and especially where we are here in Southern California and Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I mean, these children who go into Hollywood, and, you know, you see time and time again, they become drug addicts as adults. They're really, really messed up. You know, they go into crime. They do all these things, and you're like, what happened to these kids? Like, why were they, you know, but because they get into these situations when they're very, very young, where they're put around other adults, and these adults are pedophiles, and they're preying on them. And so by the time they're adults, they don't know how to manage their lives. They have no perception of reality, and then they're thrown out into the wilderness just to fend for themselves. It's, you know, you see it over and over and over again. And I think we talked about this recently on our show, this, like, I don't know if you saw this, but
Corey Feldman?
The actor Corey Feldman had come out and, yeah. And talked about the biggest problem in Hollywood is pedophilia. But you know, nobody talks about it because, I mean, he did, but I think they're very afraid to discuss it and to get into it because, you know, then they get their careers ruined or they, you know, or even worse.
Or use another aspect.
But also, their parents also pimp them into it, you know. They don't really
Exactly.
A lot of the parents know what's going on, but they want the fame so much, they don't care, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I forgot what I was about to say. It was about one of the aspects of the pedophilia cases is just looking into them. This is what I remembered. Yeah. Just looking into this stuff in detail traumatizes you. You haven't even experienced any of it directly yet. Just hearing about it, just hearing people's testimony, actually you feel pain. You feel sick. It's almost like it's happening to you to a degree, very, very much less degree, of course, but because these people pour out that pain onto you. We talked to you earlier about energy vampires, and I think there's two types of energy vampires. Those who do the traumatizing and those who have been thoroughly traumatized. You know, you ever sat with somebody who's been so thoroughly traumatized and they keep telling you all this bad stuff that's happened to you and you just feel drained and you can't listen to them anymore and you want to turn them off. You want to look away the same way that you want to turn off the television when you see starving children in Africa. We don't want to see that stuff. We don't want to hear it because it actually gives us pain, and we've all got enough pain in our own freaking lives, don't we? You know?
Yeah.
And so everybody just becomes despondent and just goes, everybody needs to just take care of themselves, which, you know, ironically is kind of the way it should be. But the problem is not only just taking care of yourself, but you also got to really take care of the people around you, you know. Community has to work and what have you. And if everybody knew each other, if everybody cared about each other, if everybody was willing to listen to all of these terrible stories that are coming out about the pedophile rings and everything like that, do you think a really, really wise bunch of people who protected their community would just sit by and watch this happen? No, they wouldn't. So fortunately, though, for the abusers, the legislation is written by people who protect the abusers.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah. Look at it this way. You've got a system that abuses children that writes its own laws and defines what is and isn't legal. And that's how children are treated here in New Zealand, at least.
Oh, all over the world, though, you know. And then there's this weird, like, I don't know if you call it a phenomenon or just with the elite. They have these pedophile rings and they do all of these weird occult sacrifices. I mean, what is that about? You know, why are they so obsessed with that? And I think it's some form of like energy stealing or something. You know, I don't really know, but it's just so rampant, not only in society but also even within the elite. But they take it to the extreme because they do like sacrifices and all this stuff. Like, what is up with that? What are your thoughts on that?
Ooh. Yeah, I interviewed Tila Tequila one time, and she said that there's underground cults and things like that where they literally drink people's blood. I've talked to a number of session musicians, like Ricky Ray, for example, who was pretty well involved in Hollywood, that says that all of the stuff really does go on, and you'd be surprised how often it goes on and how big a body count it's got. I mean, It's almost like a pharaoh sitting there, and in order for pharaoh to be satisfied, a certain number of virgins or animals or something of that nature will have to be sacrificed, okay, just to make sure pharaoh's happy. And what these people do is they don't just sacrifice animals and what have you, although I've heard allegations that stuff does go on as well, and bestiality and all forms of debauchery. But they really are At least this is the belief structure that I've come to understand it as, they steal a form of emotional energy. It's like they literally feed off of it. I had this interview with some people about the djinn or psychopaths or these mind parasites kind of thing. And he showed me a little photograph of one of these parasites. I'm not sure if it was real or whatever, but what they all agree is that these parasites can actually replicate themselves. They're capable of attaching to another person's brain stem and copying itself and then infecting the host and turning them into a psychopath as well. Hmm. Right? And so that's really scary, because it means if you're hanging around with psychopaths all the time, you become one of them. Right? Maybe this is part of the reason why all of these Hollywood people ain't frickin' standing up and saying something, is because they're being infected slowly one by one. It's like on the Body Snatchers, really. In a very real sense, this is like the Body Snatchers. They snatch your mind instead of your body.
So there's no way to defend against these things?
There's always defenses against all kinds of things. Belief in God, for example, is one thing that'll help you defend against them. Running the frack away from them and never wanting to be involved with them, that's a good way to defend against them.
There are no, like, laser beams you can, like, shoot at them or anything.
Well, I don't.
I'm
I don't,
kidding.
Well, what
on.
We know is, what we do know
I believe
is. But what some of these other people are alleging is that they actually need us. They need us to feed on, much like a vampire. If there's no pain or suffering or control and worship of them, they die. The parasite dies. Literally, if you deprive one of these psychopathic parasites of power, access to people, and pain and fear of other people around them to feed off, the parasite starves to death. I'm not sure what happens after that, because, you know, it just says, like, I don't know, you put a psychopath on a desert island, he'll die, you know, pretty quickly,
seems like you have
even
to
if
be
he's
in
got
a-
food and water.
It seems like you have to be in a low emotional state then for these things to attach to then too. Because if you have faith in a higher self or a higher power, you're happy with who you are and what you have, then they wouldn't be interested probably. You probably wouldn't taste good to them or whatever. You know, they probably wouldn't feed on you because
it's
you're
a defense
not their
system.
Style.
It's like an immune system, like, let's say, higher self and then lower self. And there's a barrier that separates them, and that's the strength of each degree. If you're really, really evil, it'll be extremely difficult to convert you to good. If you're really, really good, it'll be extremely difficult to convert you to bad. But if you're kind of on the fence, you're fair game.
Hmm. Interesting.
That's the way I look
at
it. And that's why I have a lot of faith. Not just faith in myself and faith in humanity and faith in my higher self, really. A little trinity like that. I think it was Anthony Robbins said that America's facing a crisis of faith, not in God, not in their government, but in themselves. And I think when you don't have any faith in yourself, boom, you're prey.
Yeah, I can see that. Very interesting.
Good.
Oh, I lost my train of thought. Radio silence. It's deadening. Somebody say something quick.
Ironically, sometimes I get complaints from listeners that sometimes we don't pause enough to let something sink in.
Okay. How long could we go without?
I don't know. Let's have a moment of silence to have the psychopath truth sink in, shall we? And begin. No, just kidding.
Well, you know what, though? But what you said is very interesting, because growing up in Los Angeles, you know, I see how vulnerable people are all the time. You know, I think growing up here, I have a base of friends and family that keep me grounded. But I think people that come from different countries and different cities and different states are very vulnerable. You know, we have, you know, two things like religious cults or drugs or being sucked into porn, because, they, you know, they come here with these stars in their eyes and, you know, hope that, you know, they can be famous And, you know, they don't realize the whole game, and they don't realize how much goes into getting to that level. And, you know, they're instantly crushed, and they're vulnerable to psychopaths, pedophiles, what have you, you know? And I think it's largely because they don't have that support system. When they come out here, you know, they leave their friends and family behind. And
A friend of mine told me over the weekend that when he was pulling security at a hotel in Holland, I think, in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. He saw these Israelis who would find these girls, like 19, 20-year-old girls, you know, the first time ever traveling overseas, and they grab them and they tell them, you know, we'll protect you, we're going to be really nice to you, we're going to take care of you, and all of this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Human traffickers, right?
Ugh.
You know what? Yeah, that's what happens. He'll see them like a month later, and they'll be addicted to heroin on the streets, or standing on one of the bridges over the canal about to commit suicide.
Jesus,
you know, real, real bad people. And he tried to warn some of these girls. You know, these guys will take you. They'll kidnap you, and they'll sell you into the sex trade. Some of them take the hint and then walk. Some of them don't, and they're never seen again. You know, and the Israelis will come up to him and take a knife out and press it to his throat, and you keep your freaking mouth shut, boy. You know, these people.
Oh God!
Oh yeah. The thing is, the movies can never ever convey how terrifying it is to actually have your life in danger by a psychopath who would just as soon kill you as look at you.
Well, and in fact, I would say it desensitizes you to that, because when you talk to people about these things that go on, they don't believe you because they saw it in a movie and they think it can't possibly happen. It's a movie, you know? I saw that in a movie, so that's not real. You know, things like this don't go on.
Right. There's a thing called predictive programming, which is being exposed nowadays, isn't it? And I think that's actually quite a brilliant thing to do, is put in front of people what you're planning to do ahead of time, but keep it in the fictional context. That way, if anybody sees what you're really doing, they'll think it's fiction.
But can people also take that message and figure out what people are doing and turn it the other way as well?
Yeah, well, every brilliant scheme is its own, sows the seeds of its own demise, I think.
Because I was watching the Olympics, whatever, what's the difference?
What's the difference? Well, you know, the Olympians survive the event, for one.
Do they?
Or
no, actually, beyond the Olympians surviving, it's really no different to the Hunger Games. It's all about advertising, entertaining the crowds, and distracting them from the fact that everybody's a freaking slave.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was thinking, I got into a debate with my brother because I was like, oh, we're in the Hunger Games right now, man. He's like, oh, that's stupid. Like, you know, that's not. I was like, no, but you can tell. Really, I would say that in the movie compared to now, it's very exaggerated, but we are living in... We're not physically killing and eating each other, but we are living in that kind of world, right? Where we worship people and we're worshiping the wrong things. We're worshiping money. We're materialistic and we're sacrificing our lives. Not physically, but in the sense where we're working ourselves to death, you know, to pay for iPhones and cars and stuff that we don't need, you know, and we're basing our self-worth on that. We're idolizing people and putting them up on pedestals, you know, with all the celebrities and stuff like that. So
I think that's what Edward Bernays taught in his advertising and propaganda campaigns, is to make people feel like buying something will make you feel good. This is the last thing you will need to buy, and then you will achieve happiness. Ironically, you can never achieve happiness by buying things, not permanently anyway. You need a constant situation. And you know what's really irritating is that with planned obsolescence, not only do you think that buying things makes you happy, but they keep breaking, and you have to keep buying them!
You're like, oh, my iPhone broke, I'm sad, I'll just buy another one so I can be happy.
Right.
That one breaks. You know, so it's like you're on this emotional roller coaster, you know?
Or they get a new one so fast, you know, and then you gotta have the new one because the one you've got is now obsolete, you know, and this one's got, is faster. It's like, it's 2.02 seconds faster.
There's this picture or post that somebody put up around Christmas, and it said, did you see that? It said, my mom is so stupid. She bought me the iPad 2, but I wanted the iPad 3. And then somebody wrote below it, kill yourself now, you spoiled. I'm not going to suppose to get on your show. I feel bad. But it's this materialism, especially just being a teacher and seeing it with the kids, it drives me crazy.
One
drives
word.
Drives me insane.
Soullessness.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's basically part of the agenda of materialism, don't you think?
Is
to detach you, your physical being, from your material soul.
Hmm. Yeah. 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 Have you seen that movie, documentary, Born Rich?
No.
No, it's about Jamie Johnson, who's an heir to the Johnson & Johnson fortune. He makes a documentary about kids in the 1920s. He goes around and interviews them. They're heirs to, you know, great fortune. And none of them are really happy.
Mm.
And it's very interesting. The only two that see, I mean, not that I know them personally, but I got that none of them are really, really happy. The only two, or maybe two, I would say two maybe, that were happy were the people that were actually going out and giving back. You know, they actually went somewhere away from their money, and they lived in nature for a while, or they lived in a different country, but not like in a resort. You know, they actually worked with people, or were giving back, or learned a skill, or learned how to do something. They seem to have more substance in their life, but other kids were just drinking, getting drunk, shopping, you know, and they just seemed so, you know, they didn't have, like, soulless. Not that they were bad people. I don't think they were bad people. They just seemed so unfulfilled. And it's interesting how I just thought when I was watching that, how, you know, we're taught to believe if we get those things, then we'll be happy. But then they have those things, and they're still not happy. So then what? And people were very upset, you know, that he made that movie. And I'm just like, well, maybe they realize, you know, or once the masses realize that being rich, you know, isn't the way to happiness, then that whole facade's going to be gone. And it's no, you know, you can't buy people, or you can't convince people that materialism is the road to happiness.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right. The only reason why people should want to be rich and powerful is to have enough resources to help people who cannot help themselves. I mean, everybody can help themselves to a degree, but there's certain things that you can't help yourself with, all right? You know, let's say you don't have a home and you're frickin' homeless and you don't have a job. Somebody needs to give you a job. Somebody needs to find you a home because you've got no ability to do it for yourself at that point. You know, those kind of things is where I think power and wealth traditionally should lie in. And it is in the power to do good that the wealthy should really be focusing their attentions, not on the power to amass more power or the wealth to amass more wealth, because that's like a snake eating itself. What does it amount to? Nothing. This is the problem. 'Cause I want power, I want wealth, and I want it for two reasons. Number one, the reason why I want power is because I know so many activists who don't have anybody to protect them when the law comes down on them for exposing scumbaggery. I want the power to be able to protect those people against the government, against gangs, against goons, perhaps even against the military, you know? Because these people have military intelligence, people following them and whatnot. What if I could just pass them a phone or a detector or something like that so that they could surveil their frequencies and they could actually surveil their surveillers and know what they're up to and play mind games with them? What if everybody just needed one bit of technology or something like that to make their enemy's life a living hell and make their job very difficult indeed, I would love the power and the resources to be able to give that to people. And the form in which I hope to accomplish that is by giving people media coverage. You know, being in the media is a powerful position, and power connotes much responsibility, or it connotes corruption. You're either responsible or you're corrupt. I don't think there's any in-between on this, eh?
No, there isn't. I don't think so either.
And I think if you want somebody who is powerful to not become corrupted, they need to be kept in check by people all around them that are on an equal footing, okay? Because my great fear is that my lust for power and control to do good would suddenly go to my head, and I would use that power and control to subvert people, destroy lives, and force people to do what I want instead of persuading them.
Interesting.
But you, Vinny, though, you shocked me when you said that you actually prayed for something bad to happen to you when you felt yourself getting into that position where you were kind of like living a little too easy. I'd never heard anyone say that in my entire life.
I know.
Someone pray for something bad to happen to you. It's like,
please, a hurricane, a type something, a demon, right. Something, like whatever, you know.
And then it came true because then they shut off your PayPal or something like that. Yeah. I was like, wow, okay. I've never prayed for anything bad, but, you know, because we don't usually, you know. But, I mean, the whole thing with going back to the idea of having possessions, and I think we were talking earlier about comedy and about comedians and things like that, and I don't know if you've seen the comedian Louis C.K. was talking about how, you know, we have everything and everything is fantastic. There's all this technology, but yet nobody's happy. Yeah. Do you remember that? And yeah,
I mean,
and I thought that was that, you know, the comedians tend to have, they tend to be kind of truthers if they're really good, and they can kind of show the reflection on either on society or, you know, politics or whatever it be, but and kind of show us, you know, what we are. And it's really true, because do you ever see people, you know, complaining about their phone or complaining about these like minute little things? And you know, what was the example I guess they say, oh, they go, oh, I hate Verizon. Verizon sucks, you know, and they're like all complaining about it, oh, you know. I mean, yeah, I'm sure for some people who don't have food, like it sucks to not have food, you know. Yeah. Whereas you're just complaining about Verizon. So it's but it's not those possessions, it's our relationships. And I think for Steen and I, you know, getting into the media, that is part of what has spurred our interest, was actually to be able to be a part of a community and to connect with other people like-minded, and so we could form our own tribe and our own community of us, you know, tinfoil hat wearers, us conspirators.
Or our own New World Order reptilian slaying army. You know, if you want to think
about
it.
Exactly. Oh, yeah.
It's because that's, you know, what we want.
Oh, you really got to pay attention to yourself, you know, and it's not like, oh, it's all about me, me, me. It actually is all about me, 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 but it's, what am I actually doing? Am I actually helping? And am I even happy? Okay?
Yeah.
That's the me, me, me that you should be thinking about. Instead of me, 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 what am I accumulating? How am I capable of manipulating people in order to obtain that? And how can I get away with it?
Right.
And how can I live with myself?
Yeah. And it-
now, we were talking before about comedians, and I was just thinking about this. When I was listening to Bill Hicks, and I told you in that when interviewed with me that I credit him largely with my wake-up, because it's kind of the first truth of material I came across to a degree. And I found I was never traumatized by listening to Bill Hicks, because he was telling you the truth, the scary truth.
Right.
But it, frick, it was funny, wasn't it? And I also told you during that interview that this show is not about trying to wake people up. It's not for the uninitiated. This is for people who have already woken up and gone through all that trauma and the pain of waking up and what have you, and then just trying to inject a little bit of comedy into it so that you can, you know, prevent yourself from going freaking nuts. And I think that it's not traumatic because it's funny. Now, maybe because I don't want to try and wake people up per se and be all professional about it and very, you know, serious and just not funny, then then maybe I'm actually waking up people anyway and waking them up in a way that's not traumatic so that they can easily adjust their lives from being a stupid, mindless, retarded slave to being a mindful, wise, caring, and eclectically educated individual.
Hmm. Right. That's true. Do you know Joy Camp?
Yes, I've interviewed them on the show.
Oh, you have? We have a story. All right. Here it goes.
They're great, eh?
Yeah, no, we, well, you know, first, we forgot to mention, we started this show when I was living in Taiwan. And, so April and I started the show, and we're like, we came across their videos, and we got in touch with them. We found out that we went to the same college. As April and I were leaving, they were coming in, and April was a, screenwriting or writing major, and Kevin was a writing major, and Benny was acting emphasis, and I was acting emphasis. We literally like left each other within, I don't know, the year, right? Maybe?
Yeah.
Maybe even before that. So we could have even ran into each other or been around each other, but not have known who we were.
Right. Yeah, we had these parallels with these guys, and we felt very, like, we appreciate their art and the way that they approach it with a sense of humor, and they use their talents and the things that they have. And I think that, you know, it's something that we kind of try to do too, because we don't want to, you know, it's painful to be serious all the time. I mean, do you ever get, Vinny, like the people who tell you, you need to be more serious, you need to be like a serious journalist? Do you get that sometimes?
One of my listeners, Vince, actually asked me that in the car, and he says, why don't you be serious? And I mean, like, what, like everybody else? Can you tell me, bro, name me one show that you can hear of in New Zealand that's talking about conspiracy stuff and is talking about it with a light sense of humor? In fact, tell me any person who's doing a couple of hours a day, 5 days a week, who's doing serious conspiracy stuff and that does it purely from a comedy sense of view. But of course, obviously, there's the information and introspection and all of that. He couldn't think of one. And so I was asking, you know, why is it that I should be and do everything everybody else does? That is, you know, look,
right.
They want to put you into a format, okay? There's certain people in this world who just love telling everybody else who's creative to follow certain little rules. They've followed those little rules all their life, which is the reason why they got no creativity left, so they have to impose those rules on you to destroy yours.
Yeah, and they don't even realize they're doing it, though, too. They think they're being helpful, which is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. That's the thing that you've got to realize about life in general. You really have to do things your own way. If you've got a vision, if you have purpose, if there is meaning in what you do, and people try to dissuade you from doing it, you're going to balls it up. I've seen it happen to so many people. Too much advice. You don't even do any of your thinking for yourself anymore. It becomes somebody else's show. It's not your way of doing it. And if you're not doing it your way, you're not going to be happy.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You know, like, we've had opportunities to do writing for other people, and they say, well, you know, but you have to use my format, or you have to do it in such a way. Well, I don't do that. You know, I write from a certain perspective, and it's usually personal and kind of introspective. And I talk about my own experience because, you know, there's a lot of people who do a lot of really great research, and that's their journey. But it's not mine, you know. I'm kind of living the journey that I'm on, you know, and through my experiences with my son and my vaccine, you know, what we've experienced through his vaccine damage, I have enough to pull from to write about, and that's, you know, that's my voice. That's what I have to do, and I don't. Other people can do that, and that's fine. You know, they want to go out and just have a ton of citations and a ton of research. I write the way that I do.
Which and we don't. Do you use studies?
I mean, I've done the research, but I don't necessarily need to feel the need to give people citations for everything that I'm saying, because I've also experienced it firsthand in life. So that, to me, is, you know, if they don't want to believe it, then that's up to them. You know, that's not my problem, really. You know.
Yeah, I was totally giving you stuff. I'm just messing with you because we're joking. You know, but there are people that would say stuff like, oh, well, there are no studies that show. Well, I mean, how do you think scientists get studies from other people's personal experiences or the information for their studies?
Yeah.
So that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, about the appeal to authority, where people need to tell, they need someone to tell them how to think and what to think.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, that's one of the things that happened to me on the weekend. One of my listeners told me, I meet up with my listeners, every time I go to a music gig or anything, there's always listeners of mine there, eh? Because my listeners are all very, very cool people I've found. Every single one I've met has been relatively cool. And what he was telling me is that he uses fallacies, okay? He's a philosophy student. I know about the logical fallacies and what have you, and I try to give him an Ayn Rand quote, you know, how she says you can ignore reality, but you can't ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. He cuts me off halfway through the sentence and just starts saying that she sounds crazy or she looks like a robot and then he said, well, I know it's ad hominem and what have you, but I said, ad hominem's a fallacy. And he goes, yeah, I know, I'm a philosophy. I did a philosophy paper. I know all about logical fallacies. Yeah, but you continue to use them. Fallacy comes from the Latin fallare, which means to lie. It means that not only do you know that these are lies, but you continue to lie, even after you're aware of them.
Well, it's like the light side or the dark side of the force. You can use these to empower yourself or other people, and you can use them to manipulate people.
Exactly. And he went on to say that, but there needs to be some kind of authority. You know, we need it. But appeal to authorities are logical fallacies too, and that's just a lie. Okay. Yeah. So like you really have to convince people. Through very, very simple understandings, if they're educated. It's funny, the more educated you are, the more...
The stupider you are?
No.
No.
Well, to a degree, are, I mean. it's more like your intelligence gets warped to work against reason rather than be backed up by it.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I think I talked about this somewhere... One of our shows, we were talking about this. I was looking at the Quack Watch. Are you familiar with Quack Watch page? Quack Watch?
You mean the ones who say every time somebody gets saved by some natural remedy that's been used for thousands of years or has 70 years of peer-reviewed studies and Nobel Peace Prize winners behind it, that it's all quackery and is evil,
exactly.
And therefore all those people that are pushing it are real quacks and evil and should be locked down in prison and their practices shut down.
Yes, but this guy, I'm looking at the guy that runs, you can say it better, Benny. I'm looking at the guy that runs Quack Watch, and he has all of these awards and recommendations and certificates. I was like, but yeah, he's never cured anybody from cancer or, you know, any other disease. And it's funny though, because I've known people that have searched, you know, they've had some kind of ailment, and then I'll give them like a doctor to like Dr. Mercola, right? And they'll put in Dr. Mercola, and then Quack Watch will come up and they'll say, oh, well, you know, Dr. Mercola isn't a real doctor because it says so on Quack Watch. I'm like, well, he's cured cancer. So who are you going to believe, the guy with like the 25 certificates, or are you going to believe the dude that actually cured cancer?
I love that. Like Cancer Society, you know, you go to they do their donation drives every year. You know, in New Zealand we have Daffodil Day. You know, daffodil flower is quite pretty. You know, and they hand out these plastic daffodils to everybody, and they take your money. And they've existed for 20 years. And you go up and you ask them, one, so how long's the Cancer Society been around? Oh, about 20 years. And how many times have they cured somebody of cancer? None. And how many cures for cancer have they come up with so far? None? Okay, well, if you were a builder and you told me that you've been building stuff for 20 years and actually haven't built a single thing, then I think you're a scam artist.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know what's worse? Is that they use people as their frontline, donation drivers who have had somebody in their family die of cancer. So that way, if somebody comes up to you and says that there are cures for cancer and the Cancer Society ain't doing anything about it, they won't listen to you and get angry with you and tell you to bugger off.
Yeah, right. And then they'll make you feel bad saying that you're like anti-science. are, you know, anti-cancer because you're just being a mean, heartless person.
Yeah, I'm anti-science because I verify things with scientifically peer-reviewed articles and people and people who are Nobel Peace Prize winners and so on and so forth. I don't understand the mentality, but I guess that's just because I'm not retarded.
Well, they don't want to listen. You know, people don't want to listen to you. They know everything. And there's nothing, you know, that's the mentality. There's nothing that you can tell them that they don't already know. They've already made up their mind about what they think about what you have to say. Therefore, they don't feel they have to listen. Like we talked about Andrew Wakefield before, and he was on an interview one day, and he was talking about the situation that happened to him. And then a doctor came up to him, was like yelling and screaming at him, and he was like, "Well, did you even read my paper?" And the doctor was like, "Well, I don't need to." Well, how are you going to like attack somebody on their views if you haven't even read what they wrote? That's just so stupid, you know? Right. He's a doctor, but he's retarded. You know?
Totally.
So,
yeah, yeah. Hello, my name is Dr. Retarded. I'm here to give you a vasectomy.
Oh, no.
Dude, Dr. Oh, Retarded and his scalpel are going nowhere near my boys, okay?
Yeah.
Right.
Tell me about it.
Right. Yeah, because they can't come up with it. I mean, they can't. And like you brought up the point of how they use family members, they'll parade these people, which is really sick, to be honest. You know, these people who have lost loved ones. And it's hard for them to hear you say, well, there's a natural cure, because then they think, well, I let my family member die and I didn't even know that there was a cure. You know, that's what's going on internally through them. And, I was telling Christine this earlier, is that I had actually lost a friend because she cut me off because of my views on 9/11. That really upset her, and she never wanted to talk about it or say anything. And you know, I she lived in New York at the time, and I think that you know she just kind of knew people who had friends of families and things like that who had been killed. But it kind of was surprising to me, because I'm going, well, wouldn't you want to know the truth of like how they died? Wouldn't that sort of be something you'd be interested in and wanting to maybe? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I can understand that being a painful experience from the beginning, but then once you kind of get past that and you can sort of say, okay, well, let me look at this. I want the people who actually did this, not the people who, you know, these box cutter carriers. I don't even know what that crazy story is.
just to play a little devil's advocate, I think it's, I think for them it's like a double betrayal.
Yeah,
because
sure.
It's like, first of all, the person I love was killed. Second of all, I was betrayed by my country and people that I trusted.
Well,
it's
that's
like
a good
too much, maybe, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point that people bring up. But there have been people in the 9/11 Truth Movement who have lost family members, and they
Guess who started the 9/11 Truth Movement? Hello, you. The family members who were unhappy with the BS investigation where the people who committed the crime and appointed all the commissioners, and even though they did that, 6 out of 10 of them said it was BS, okay? Yeah. Come on, people! You've got to be freaking kidding me. Right. You know what? Hear what it is. It's brain box syndrome, okay? You know, this cognitive dissonance thing where you can't accept something psychologically because I liken it to somebody building your mind and reality the same way one would build a house with your own bare hands. You have that a lot of attachment to this thing that you've built, your perception of reality. And how devastating is it to see your house burned down, know that you've got no insurance, and when you're telling them that 9/11 was an inside job and they've got this whole brain box thing worked out, it's like telling somebody to burn down their own house that they built with their bare hands because it's rickety and dangerous and it's going to kill them, and they have to sacrifice and give up all of that. Mm. Barely anybody will. They'll go back and they'll shut the door in your face, and they'll live in that house until it crumples in and crushes them and they die.
Mm. Right.
Mm. Yeah. Well.
So why do some people go on to question it, you know? Like how did the family members that do start that movement and are asking these types of questions, how do they do it? How are they willing to like just rebuild their house?
Two words.
You know what I mean?
Moral obligation.
Mm.
You know? It's my favorite two words of all time, I guess. Because they make you do really stupid things for really good reasons. That's moral obligation in a nutshell.
Right. It's like when you left your job, Vinny. And then we had a guy on our show, Clint Richardson, who was working in Hollywood as a sound designer. And he had a moral obligation. He felt after a while, you know, because what he was doing was he was creating these sounds of like monsters and things like that. And he told us how they create those is that they'll actually record the sound of castrating a pig. You know, they'll record real living things in
being pain. Like dismembered. Yeah. And
mm-hmm, exactly.
It's terrible.
And so, right. And so he had a conscience, crisis of conscience doing this, even though he was making a lot of money, because he realized that, you know, this was sort of affecting people's psyches and they were putting this stuff out there. And, you know, and so I think that's a good point that you bring up, you know, because you think about the family members that created the group Building What, about the World Trade Center 7, you know, Building 7. It's like those were all family members. And though their families, the people that died in that building, then they would just ignore them and they just act like it doesn't exist. That must be a horrible feeling. You know?
Yeah. I once got assaulted on Queen Street for speaking out for the 9/11 by families by somebody who told me I was being insensitive to them for speaking out about them.
Right, but that's my point, is that how's that insensitive if you're actually trying to defend them? You're trying to, you know, bring the people to justice who actually did it and not these, you know, whatever fairy tale that they're talking about.
That's like somebody, this is like a white guy walking out and going, justice for the black population. And then a white guy coming up to him going, you're racist.
Yeah.
Maybe and then smacking him for it.
Yeah. It's so, yeah.
Again, I love this word retarded almost as much as I love the words moral obligation. In fact, it is a moral obligation to not be frickin' retarded. And I'm not talking about like actually having problems and things of this nature. In common usage of the word retarded, it just basically means foolish. Okay, somebody who's so dumb, that so foolish that they're basically incapable of anything that you would actually expect of an adult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you get people who say, oh, you shouldn't use that word, or you shouldn't use certain words of certain language because it's offensive?
Well, I could think up of three swear words that rhyme with FCC. All right. Now, I just want to say, F you to the FCC. Mm-hmm. F you to restricting people's language. Okay? Look, it's words. They don't hurt. They don't destroy things. Okay? Like, I could use the worst language ever at my computers. And when they're fracking up, oh, yes, I do. But they don't get destroyed. And they don't get emotionally beat up about it, right? And look, if you're over 18, frickin' handle it like an adult, okay?
Well, that, you know, that kind of goes back to that whole, like, responsibility thing we were talking about earlier, right? Like, honestly, I would say words are very powerful, and they are important, and I think you should watch. I don't think you should restrict people's language, but I think it's gotten to the point, too, where, you know, parents need to have the relationship with their children where, you know, they can't shield their children from hearing like certain words. So they need to have the relationship or the talk with their children about the power of words and when to use them. Right. But if the FCC is, if it's getting to the point where, you know, the FCC has to restrict certain things because of that, it's like the parent's not taking responsibility for their child. They're having somebody else. They want somebody else to be responsible.
Yeah. You know what political correctness is about? One thing and one thing only. Stopping people from saying what they really think.
Yes, exactly.
Okay?
Exactly.
I think that's basically the end of the story there. If that's the only reason for it to exist, don't think it should exist anymore, eh?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's going back to the comedian thing, because I think comedians are often really, you know, they... they're big proponents of, you know, being able to use their speech, because then if you can't use, say, the language that you want, then you aren't as funny sometimes. And there's this comedian called Nick Swartzen who talks about the words gay and retarded, and he said that he uses these words all the time when he's on stage. And after one of his shows, this woman came up to him, she's like, stop. Don't do that. Don't use those words. Those words are hurtful, you know. And he was like, come on, it's just a word, you know, and I'm not really that smart, so I only have a limited vocabulary. I use what I say to do. Anyway, it's a really funny piece.
You know what Bill Bird would say to that woman? What are you, a fag?
But aren't you a gay retard? That's what I would have said.
No. You know what you say? It was like on, what's his name? Mark Dice, he goes around talking to black people, and he's talking about the two different versions of the N-word, you know? One is racist, and one is just, you know, you're my N-word. And I can't even say it on the show, man, because the FCC, she aren't Muslim. And expectedly, every black person knew precisely what he was talking about and gave him the N-word pass. He was able to say it, you know?
It's Louis C. We keep going back to Louis C.K., man, but we have to. But he talks about like how people say the N-word and how, you know, he has this whole funny bit talking about it and how it makes you like, it still makes you think the N-word in your head, you know. Yeah. Or basically, it just goes back to what you're saying. It's just it's keeping people from saying what they really mean. But I hate it. Like, I'll say it on our show because, you know, I'll respect your show, but I'm not afraid of that word. I don't like, as a black person, having to be afraid. And I also think to me, it seems like it's some kind of a program. So if somebody calls me that, I'm immediately expected to lose my flippin' mind and act inappropriately.
I found it's really funny. You can't actually say a racial slur to a white person and have them be offended. Have you noticed that?
I'm
really offended, Clarence. Some black person called me a cracker.
Well, you have to hit it in their ethnic group. So if they're Jewish, if there's a specific word for Jewish people or for Irish people or, you know, something like that, I think it hits a little closer to the core. Like, honky doesn't cut it.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, cracker or honky, it's laughable. But I think you actually calling white people racist, I think that gets more white people upset than... if they are really racist, like, that's more offensive to, you know, you call them racist. I've seen white people cry over that. I have. Because I'm like, I'm not a racist. I voted for Obama.
Oh, no.
I get money through the United Negro College Fund. Who do you think I am?
Oh, my goodness.
I've seen that. I swear to God.
What do you mean? You voted for Obama, who doubled funding to Planned Parenthood and executed twice as many black babies before they were born, yo. You racist ass, man. You got to have that crack of guilt. I'ma kill you, fool.
Yeah, I know. It's true, though. It's like, that's what you do. You call the racist, and that's the racial slur for white people, is racist.
Here's how I convey racism and everything else in language. Am I intending to offend somebody? Am I actually deliberately insulting them? Yes? Then be offended. Am I not intending to insult you? Is there no malice involved in the words that I'm saying? Then don't be offended. Grow up.
There are people that want to be offended, though. You know, there are people that are always looking to be offended, too. And I'm over those people.
Look, those people will go away as soon as you produce a 9mm pistol, all right? Stop telling me what to do, yo. Okay, I'm out of here.
It's like, no, it's shit. So funny.
Unfortunately, I'm not armed, so I do have to deal with those kind of people. By blocking them on Facebook. It's like, I don't know. Maybe this is a bit disgusting, girls. I'm not sure if you've had this experience, but when you're a teenager, and even sometimes nowadays, you get them on occasion, you get this real big, juicy, fat pimple or something like that, and that satisfaction that you get when it pops and just goes everywhere, you know, like, ah, ha, ha, yeah, yeah, that kind of sick sensation, it's really kind of disgusting. I get the same sensation when I block people who are douchebags.
It's great. Yeah, because it's like they want to write you, and they're like, type, type, type. Oh, I'm blocked. oh, you're like, oh, you know, you right. like mute them. And then yeah. they'd have to go out and like kick a cat or something, you know, whatever. Whatever. Because obviously that, honestly, it's hard not to take it personally, but when I've gotten sucked into that at the end of the day, I have to really remember it's really not about me. If they're that mean and that vindictive, because we were also talking about like some of these Facebook pages that people put up just to make fun of people, not trying to get to understand them or where they're coming from, but just to make fun of them. What kind of pathetic life is that? You know?
Have no life, so therefore I need to make sure that the people who do currently have a life have less of one, so they're bound to my little level and make me feel better about myself. It's kind of like I did this great post on Facebook about atheists. I mentioned on your show that I have a lot of arguments with feminists and how they invariably all argue the exact same way, nastily, and invariably are all single. Much like atheists, every time I argue with them, they're very, very mean, insulting. They use ad hominem attacks quite a bit, and it's almost like they don't believe in a higher self, so they need to act like a lowlife and speak down to you in order to feel okay with it.
Well, it's, in some ways, their dogma is very religious, you know, because they don't know everything, but then they seem to know that there isn't a God. Well, how do you know that?
Oh, they know science, though. They know science.
Well, right, or yeah, they believe in that religion, right, or what people call science. And so, but you know, that's like a very dogmatic belief, is to sit there and go, or very, you know, in a lot of ways, they're very pious. They can be like, well, you believe in a higher power, so therefore, you know, you must be stupid.
You know? Yeah, yeah. Because right. there's no scientific, biological proof, and there have been no studies on God, so because I can't read the studies on God, you're stupid.
And I love the...
and I'm better than you.
Yeah, and I love the New Agers too, who believe there's no such thing as good and evil. And I go, really? When was the last time you killed a child and with malicious intent? Well, I never have. Have you ever beaten anybody up for no reason or just taken the money? No, I haven't done that. What do you do for a living? Well, I make really good health products and send them out to people at a fair and reasonable price. If you don't believe in good and evil, then why are you living good, you douchebag?
I have a question, though. Do you think that the global elites think that they're evil, though? Is it? I'm just playing devil's advocate a little bit because I'm like, are they saying that the people that are doing bad things to us, they don't think that they're evil, or they're just saying that there's no
evil? Oh, no. They think they have to do what they're doing. They believe that we are so incapable of taking care of ourselves that they have to take care of every aspect of our lives. All right? They think what they're doing to us is good for us. They think poisoning us is good for us, killing us is good for us, enslaving us is good for us, surveilling everything we do is good for us, and turning us into low IQ, infertile slave scum is good for us and good for the planet. And they believe that they're doing the right thing. Many terrible things have been done throughout history in the name of doing the right thing. And I think that's why a lot of truthers that I've met have become... they've gone over to the dark side. You know what I'm saying? Like in the Star Wars sense of the word?
Yeah, no, totally. Where they think if they've just got rid of these certain group of people, right?
Then what's insanity? What's insanity? It's not believing in everything that everybody else can see. You know, that's what insanity is. And this is what I believe the elite are. They believe they're doing the right thing because they're completely insane.
Right.
Got you. So going back to the New Age, so are you, I was asking, so does they just don't, they believe there's no such thing as evil, period?
No. Do you know what the definition of solipsism is?
No, would you please let me know?
Okay,
please,
you've heard of the Big Bang, how it created everything out of nothing? Okay,
yeah.
That's basically solipsism in a nutshell, except the person who's perceiving everything in the entire frickin' universe is their own creation. I create absolutely everything, and nothing else, nothing exists. That's the philosophy in a nutshell. Doesn't that sound totally insane to you?
Right.
And not to mention, it's really stupid too, because it's like, I create everything. Yeah, but bro, aren't there like 7 billion other people? Are you saying that none of them create anything except you? You know? I mean, it's just even simple logic, you know. Oh, what you resist persists. Really, when was the last time you got shot at and didn't shoot back? You know? something right. like that. What you resist actually is what your power comes from. I don't think people realize this, but there's two ways of gaining power for yourself. One is by resisting people who want to take something from you, and the other is by creating something that doesn't yet exist from nothing, you know?